All right. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Father.
So we're going to do the prodigal son today, and we're going to talk about that. And Jesse really wants to read. So let's see. I think I'll ask Jesse to read.
Yes.
All right. Read nice and loud, please.
The parable of the prodigal and his son.
Prodigal son.
And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that falls to me. And he divided his living between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took his journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in loose living. And when he had spent everything, a great famine arose in that country, and he began to be in want. So he went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed his swine. And he would gladly have fed on the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough to spare? But I perish here with hunger. I will rise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me but as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was yet at a distance, his father saw him and had compassion, and he ran and embraced and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and make merry. For my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to make merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what this meant. And he said to him, your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, lo, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your living with harlots, you killed for him the fatted calf. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to make merry and to be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.
Thank you, Jesse. Left you hanging. High five. There you go. Okay. Don't have a Tom Brady moment, all right? I'll explain that afterwards. It's a Tom Brady moment. Just look it up. There's a scene where Tom Brady, there's a game where it was, just scored a touchdown, went to the sidelines, a high five, and no one high fived him. So, like, literally for like 30 seconds, he's walking around trying to get high fived. It looks funny. So, look it up later.
Okay.
Why do you have Tom Brady as a tag now on the episode? I don't know. Anyway. So thoughts, comments, questions. Jason, you got something. Speak loudly, please.
Okay. So first, the son shows humility.
Which one?
The first son. That.
The younger or the older?
I don't remember which one is which. The one that went to his father and repented.
That's the younger.
The younger one. And the older one, though he's been around his father a lot more, grew jealous of the younger brother for that his father has thrown this party for the younger brother, which has not done so well, but yet the older brother has done so much. But through his anger and his anger and that he was jealous. I don't remember what the end. I'm sorry. No.
It's all right.
But it just reminds me of Cain and Abel.
How so?
Well, Cain and Abel were brothers, and from what I remember, it said Abel did good by God, and Cain did what he could, but he was like
inferior.
And He grew jealous of all that God had given his brother. Thus, through his anger and jealousy, is rebuke the right word to say? He just rebuked God, stained him, and said, God, I don't need you anymore. And God said, you cannot till from this land.
A lot louder here. Starting to, a little hard to hear you.
Oh, sorry.
I can't hear you, neither can the microphone.
I'm thinking. And...
But, well, let me ask you this. I'll jump in for a second to hear to kind of help with this. So how would you equate the prodigal son to Cain and Abel?
How would I equate?
What is it? That's an interesting take. I've never heard anyone equate that story. That's why I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Never thought of that. Let's talk about that. Jesse, you want to jump in? You have solutions?
Cain could have very easily, this is highlighting what Cain could have done, but he refused to do. He could have, asked for mercy from God for what he did, but he didn't, and that's why he was cursed.
Well, yeah, the killing part didn't help.
Yeah.
I think both of you are kind of onto something, but not quite there. The Cain and Abel thing's interesting, because there's similarities there, right?
Mm.
Of course, there's similarities. I think the word you're looking for, rather, I should say, is the jealousy of that. The whole jealousy of it, right? The elder brother is jealous of the younger brother who squandered off his wealth, his inheritance, while the older brother worked hard and didn't receive it. Right? Because in this parable, the younger one asks for his inheritance early, and then he goes off and squanders it. And you'll hear many times, and the fathers of the church will talk about this, where it's sort of like, well, of course he came back because he had nothing left, you know, kind of a thing. And it's like he wasted it all. Like, of course he's going to come back, right? That's the elder brother's argument. Of course he's going to come back. Like, you know, think of it like this. Think of it from all of you, right? You know, if you had a big inheritance or something like that, and stuff like that, that your parents were giving you, and you had a sibling and stuff like that, and you went and blew that inheritance. They gave it to you early. You went and blew it. What are you going to do with it? You're probably going to call up your folks and say, hey, I need some more money, right? You know, I mean, or hey, I want to come back because I realize it's a little harder, right? Like that, like you can see the argument of the elder brother going, he blew it, like kind of a thing. But we would take it a little bit to a different degree in the sense of let's not focus on the jealousy. Let's focus on the father. Because the father is the key player in this whole story. He's the one that really kind of brings it all to home, in this sense. You all right?
His phone.
Oh, okay. You know, the father in this entire... You got to come back up. Don't think you can run away. The father in this story is really like the key player. The other two are just sort of like... I don't know if the word pawns is the right word I want to use, but they're kind of the setup, if you will, to everything. Because the jealousy of the older brother is obviously a point we want to talk about. And that's what I was saying about with the fathers of the church talk a lot about that. Right, the younger brother, you could make the claim of what others have said, where of course he's going to come home because he was, you know, he had blown it all and he had ruined it and he's got nothing to live for, right? But I believe it was St. John that said this, St. John Chrysostom said this, right? But when he comes back, he could have easily gone back to his father and said, give me, you know, more of what you have, right? You're a wealthy man, give me more of this, right? But he just says, look, I just want to be like one of your servants. Right, I just want to be here. I don't let me be in the stalls as long as I have a place, right? Because I either could be homeless or I could be like slightly better than homeless. So I want to be slightly better than homeless versus not homeless, kind of a thing, you know. And the father in this whole story looks at this and goes, well, let's look at this here and let's see. You have messed up, completely messed up, but we're going to move past that. We're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on something that's a little more important, something a little more at hand here, right? And that's your back, you know? You know, you took this journey, and I don't agree with how you took this journey, but I'm glad you're here, right? Like, you're here, and not only are you here, you're showing real repentance. You're actually sorry for what you did, right? You know, because a parent can only do so much for their children. You know, I think I'm the only one here actually with kids. So I think this only really applies for me to explain this, but I'll explain this the best that I can. In this sense of, right, like you spend your whole job as a parent trying to make sure that your kids will grow up and be stable. And that they'll, you know, I heard a commentator one time say this, you know, that your entire job as a parent is to make sure they have everything they need in their life and to get to heaven, right? That's kind of the way mindset I try to approach with my daughter and, you know, soon to be other child, son, and everything like that, you know, is that I want them to have what they need and get to heaven, right? You know, you try to equip them with all of that. But at the end of the day, they're going to be who they're going to be regardless of the things you do. Now, you can shape them in certain aspects of it. You can try to tell them, look, this is right from wrong. And you do the absolute best to tell them this is right from wrong. And for the most part, they will listen to you and they'll for the most part, they will follow after that. But at the end of the day, their own personalities are going to start to kind of come out. You know, and so you hope you can convince them enough of the right thing so that when the wrong things come about, you minimize that. That's essentially how every parent approaches their child, okay, their children. And in that same sense, that's kind of how God approaches us too, right? And it's through free will, right? He gives us all the tools and shows us this is the way of living your life and this is the appropriate way and that you've been created to glorify me and to follow, not me, Father Stephen, but to follow, glorify me as in God, okay? And to follow after him and such like that. And ultimately, you have to make that choice to do so. I gave you all the tools to do so, right? And if you fall away from them, there's nothing I can do about that. That's on you at this point, you know, sort of a thing. Really, you know, our salvation in this sense of it, right, is essentially God saying, here's salvation right here. I've given you everything for salvation. Now do something about it because I can't force you into salvation because then it's not real love anymore. It's not actually salvation anymore. What it turns into is you're just a robot. You're a program. You're, to put it in a modern sense, you're no better than AI, okay? Like, you're just exist. You're nothing to it, right? And in this story, with regards to the father, I mean, like that, like, he did all he could for both of his sons. You know, he shaped one son to be a good, faithful servant who worked hard and all that kind of stuff. Another son that he did the best he could, the son turned out to be however he turned out to be. But the key here with this thing, with the first son, the one who goes out and messes it all up, is that he comes back and he repents, right? And the father looks at this and goes, and he's the key pivotal figure in this story because he's what represents Christ, represents God, right? He's the key one who sits there and, you know, is overjoyed that his son came back because it means two things. The first thing is what I just talked about, how you try to shape your children to a certain way. It means that something did get through to his son. That he was able to do something, even though he, you know, because everyone has different personalities and such like that. And that's demonstrated in this parable, that he was able to get through something because not only did his son come back, but he came back and repented. So it means he did something right with his son, even though he probably felt like an absolute failure with him. And then the other son is, the other son, you know, represents the other aspect of that, where he failed in that sense because he created a jealousy between the two of them, where the one was responsible and the other was not. And the other one needed to learn that he needs to rejoice as well. So he is like, in a sense of it, and I believe it was St. Basil who said this, right? That he equates this parable to, and again, I could be misquoting, you know, St. Basil, so please forgive me. I know it was one of them that said this. Top of my head, it's been a long day, you know, he basically equates it to the Old Testament, or the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, right? That the Old Covenant is the son, the older son, who did everything he was supposed to do, followed all the rules, but he didn't understand the reason for why he was doing it. He was doing it because he just thought he was supposed to do it, instead of doing it for the glory of God, right? Doing it for the glory of his family, right? This older son understood that he himself wasn't just a good and faithful servant because he was a good and faithful servant. He was a good and faithful servant because he loved his father. And in that case, he didn't love his father. He loved the fact that he was a good and faithful servant. He's more focused on his own rules and following the letter of the law, if you will, that he wasn't actually being, you know, the one who loves the law. Like, the law is supposed to be there to guide you to love God. It's not supposed to be God. It's not supposed to become God, which is something that the Old Testament, I should say the Jews of the Old Testament, didn't seem to understand, which is one of the reasons why Jesus comes, right? To convince them and say, look, you guys have completely misunderstood this whole purpose of this, of why you were given the law. You weren't given the law so it could become your new God. You were given the law so it could help you guide you to God, right? In that sense, which is why Jesus tells them not to come to fulfill that. I'm trying to show you this is the right direction, you know? And in that, getting back to this parable that Jesus uses with this parable, right? Is that ultimately it's getting back to the Father. And it's understanding that, you know, you need to do it through with the right mindset. Yeah, some of you are going to go off into the wilderness. Some of you are going to completely squander it. But if you come back with an earnest soul, with an earnest heart, and one of repentance, the Father's going to do nothing but receive you back in. At the exact same time, you know, those who kind of already knew it, right? You need to not make that, you know, your idol. Don't create that into a new God. In other words, another way of looking at it, right, is think of it like the church. What the church is, where we have people like myself who are cradled, who are raised in the church, and all of you who are converts to the church, right? In this sense of, like, you know, I talked about this a while back or a few weeks ago, right? Don't squander the richness of the church, you know, and things like that. Well, I'm not supposed to sit there and treat the faith as someone who grew up in the church as something that's all mine and I'm better than everybody else, right? I'm supposed to treat the church as, it don't matter if you're a convert or a cradle, right? And to give a better way of it, I'm going to tell a little story that Father Tom Hopko used to tell, which talks about a Filipino woman. I don't know if you guys have heard this story before. If you heard it, too bad, you're hearing it again. There's this Filipino woman who comes to church, right? It's an old Russian church, everything like that. And she comes to liturgy. She's with her son. She comes to liturgy for the first time. She'd never been to church before. She comes in and, you know, she goes through the whole service and she finds the service absolutely beautiful. And she goes over to coffee hour. And you know, first of all, this is an old Russian church where the Russians basically ignored her the entire liturgy, but that didn't matter to her. What the issue came about was is when she was over in their hall having the meal, and right at that, she gets her food, she goes with her son, she sits down, all this good stuff. A Russian lady comes up to her and says, honey, your church is down the street. This is our church, right? And that story, he always used to say, he used to joke and stuff like that and say that if he found out anyone done that, he would, you know, hell would be raised sort of a thing, right? Because you don't do that to somebody, especially someone who's coming to church for the first time, right? But in a sense of it, and one of the reasons I told that story is because that's the older brother being like, this is all mine, and I should be getting it, and completely ignoring the fact that there's somebody here who wants to receive it, right? Which is another reason why, you know, I always talk about how my number one sort of thing I tell people is you're always welcome. Why do you think I say that? Because it sounds good on a business card? No, because that's the prodigal son, right? Is essentially wants to, it's to see the son return and to be overjoyed with it, right? You know, because God doesn't want to just be by himself. He created us so he could have, show that love out to the entire universe, right? He doesn't, if he wanted to, he doesn't need, this is the thing, right? So this is often something that, like, is sort of a hard reality that people tend to forget. God doesn't need you, okay? And the whole sense of it, it sounds harsh to hear that. He doesn't really need us, right? It's not going to make him any less God. He doesn't cease to be God because he destroys us or makes us cease to exist, right? Because like I've said before, God could completely erase the universe right now and then bring it back and we would never even know, you know? Like, he could do it and act as though we never experienced it, right? What is it called, the Mandela effect or whatever?
It could have already happened.
It could have happened right now in this conversation, you know? We wouldn't know because he could have completely brought us all back as if nothing had ever happened, you know? He could have Thanos'd us, you know? Hashtag MCU, I guess. You know, and could have brought us all back with a snap like that. You know, could have destroyed us all with a snap like that. You know, he doesn't need us. But at the same time, that would make him not be the God he actually is, right? Because God is love. And to be love, you have to share that. Love is ultimately a sharing act. And so when we see God, you know, basically sharing that to others, we're called to do the exact same thing, which is why, going back to the Father, why the Father is such a pivotal character in this story, and really is the pivotal character, right, is that he's showing that sharing and what that love looks like. And oftentimes, whenever we talk about this parable, there's a particular sermon that's always brought up. Anyone know what it is? It happens every year on Pascha. That's like a dead giveaway if you don't know what it is at that point. No pun intended. Yeah, St. John Chrysostom's Paschal homily, right? Which he talks about all the different times that people come back, right? And everything that, and St. John gets criticized as a universalist because people see it as, oh, look, see, everyone's welcome. And they could have basically just said, forget it. I'm not going to follow the fast. I'm not going to go to church. I'm not going to pray. I just got to show up like 5 minutes beforehand and I'm good to go. So all you guys wasted your time the last, you know, 50 odd days, right? You know, the 40 days plus all the Holy Week, you know, and all the weekends preceding up to that. Oh, what a waste of time. I can show up every year on Pascha and I'm good to go. You know, people take it like that. You know, that's why we have that joke about calling people CEOs, Christmas, Easter, Orthodox. Okay. Those only show up at those times of the year because of that mindset, you know, but that's not what his homily is about. His homily is talking about the fact that when someone's ready to go to truly, you know, someone is really ready for repentance and really wants to return to the Father, then we should be overjoyed for that. We should be rejoicing regardless of when they came back, right? They could have came back 5 minutes ago, or they could have came back, you know, an hour ago. They could have came back 2 days ago, you know, and this sort of sense of it. Now, I'm going to enact Godwin's law here for just a second, right? The whole thing about, you know, invoking Hitler, right? But you think about it like this, right? If you went to the kingdom of heaven right now, all of you were just a drop dead, and there you are standing before God, and you see to your side, there's Hitler there. There's always this question of, would you be happy that he's there, or would you be like, oh my gosh, Hitler's here? Like, how did he, you know? But see, that's the thing, right? You're called to be overjoyed despite everything that is involved with Hitler. I'm not saying, I am not in any way, let me make it very clear, I'm not in any way thinking that Hitler's going to be standing there. But he could be. That's the whole thing, right? Anybody could be. Your worst enemy could be. Your best friend could be your worst enemy, right? And we're called to sit there and go, that's a joyful thing. Why? Because they repented. And they return to the Father with a true repentance. In other words, they did the very thing that sin stops us from doing. Sin makes us look away from God. And repentance makes us look towards God and focus on God and experience that love. So we're supposed to be overjoyed. That's why I say John speaks of his, with his Paschal sermon is, you know, Christ is risen. Christ is risen over and over and over again, right? You know, it's overjoy, it's joy, it's joy, it's joy. It's all about joy. Because, you know, you've returned to the Father, and you've not only returned to the Father, but you've become part of what God made us to be. Those who share in that love. And that's essentially why this parable, you know, is important for us in that sense of it. That's why he's the pivotal character. It's because we're called to be overjoyed in that sense. Now, moving on with all of that in mind, how does that apply to the church today? Like, what would you guys think is sort of the, we talk a lot about evangelism, how this class is basically a kind of an evangelism coaching class. That's what someone told me the other day that they were listening to me. Apparently, they said, oh, your class makes me think of like evangelism coaching. I'm like, okay, cool. I mean, but in a sense of it, it kind of is. So how would that apply in all of this? How does that apply with regards to that overjoy that someone returns, or the joy of sharing in the love of God? How does that apply to us in the church today, here and now?
I think it's pretty reflective of how many converts we're getting, especially from Protestants.
What do you mean by that?
I think in a way the Protestant church is kind of like the runaway son that goes up, takes his inheritance and goes off and does whatever, but a lot of people are sort of realizing that they thirst for God and that brings them here.
Okay.
And the glorified church receives them and move open their arms.
We're going to come back to that in a second. Jason.
I'll put it in an aspect of like me being here. When I came here and I really took this, it's not, it's,
to see that I got two people to come in, even have my little sister come in, it creates a lot of joy in me that they come back, because I know their past. I know what they have done. I've seen their struggles and the things that they do.
Okay.
And as the church has been described to me as medicine, it's the hospital essentially.
Yes.
To see them come to the church, I get overjoyed seeing them, especially that they're catechumens. They walk up and I'm like, ooh, my two boys up there. I'm so happy.
Your two boys?
Yeah, my two boys.
The one that's sitting next to you and the one that's not here?
Yeah. Put them up there. They're here. They're crying. They want to heal. I know what they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to see that they see the glory of Christ and how it helps them.
Right.
In a sense, and that they want to achieve salvation with me.
So you guys are taking two, both of you, I'm going to jump in for a second. You're taking two aspects of this, sort of like a bridge into it, right? So Jesse talks about it in the sense of like people are coming to Orthodoxy and such like that as a return to the truth, right? And you hear about that all the time. What's one of the biggest things I've heard about, and you guys can echo this and tell me or not if I'm right about this, that I hear is many churches today are trying to return back to biblical Christianity, or would you hear ancient Christianity, right? We had an entire movement back in, what, the 80s, 70s, 80s, with the Evangelical Orthodox Church, right? You guys familiar with that church? In fact, Kate Bright, one of our parishioners here, was part of that. You guys familiar with that? You are, Chad, right?
They converted the Antiochian Church in 87, I believe.
You said they murdered?
No. They converted.
Oh, converted. I heard murdered. Sorry. I want to clarify that. Like, I got dark. Right. So what happened was is that it was a church that they started doing the thing. They started acting Orthodox. They were, I'm going to put it this way in the sense of it. I know it sounds bad, but they were playing church or cosplaying. Okay. They were dressing in vestments. They were walking around as clergy. They had men, women, they didn't care. Right. So women bishops. Women metropolitans, women priests, women deacons, married bishops, a whole lot of it. They were trying to be a representation of Orthodoxy without being part of the Orthodox Church. But that wasn't working for them. They had to continue to kind of go more east. So the group of them, and it was started initially by members of the college campus known as Crusade for Christ. And Father Peter Gilquist was one of the members. I can't remember all the people that were involved up top of my head, right? But there was this, this sort of pool to that. They wanted to be like the ancient church. And eventually they went and approached different jurisdictions, and the Antiochians are the ones that received them in. And so they had a whole thing where they did a mass conversion and mass ordinations, a whole lot of it, and brought in like 40 churches, or it might have been more than that. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. I wasn't expecting to bring up them today, or I would have had some notes on this, but they brought in a whole thing of it, right? And they all basically became Orthodox, right? And we've heard even in other situations and stories, like that recent one in England, I don't know if you guys have heard about the St. Hilda Church, right? Which was some Protestant church that kind of came in too, right? And even the Annunciation in Milwaukee, Oregon is another good example of this, with Father Matthew. He brought an entire church in himself, into the church, right? And so like that. And then, of course, you also hear about like some of the groups like in the West, going back to the West, the Holy Order of Man, which is like, I'm saying like a third of the clergy in the Diocese of the West came from that organization, where it was a bunch of them kind of it was a little bit of the hippie generation, but, all the California hippies and stuff like that sort of got into like mysticism and eventually led them into creating their own sort of Orthodox church, and eventually they all got received in and became priests in the Orthodox Church, and a lot of their parishioners and stuff like that became Orthodox Christians, right? Like those groups, kind of like what Jesse said, like they were returning home because they were hungering the real church, in this sense of it, So there's that aspect of it in the modern sense. We see that. We see mass conversions happening throughout the world, right? We see like entire villages in different places. And that's good. That's one aspect of it, right? It's not quite where I'm going with this, but that's one aspect that's very good. They got Jason's, where we talk about like, the joy of seeing people in the church and seeing that grow, right? Like looking at the church and going, what a joy it is that you have people, right? And I make that joke with you guys, you Jason and you Nate, about the whole thing where you're competing with each other over people you bring in, right? Sort of this thing of like, you know, although I think you guys are about tied right now, I think is what it is. You don't get to count Bree. Okay, unfortunately.
People,
you're married to her. You don't get to count her.
My people in Washington don't count either.
They don't count either. You don't get them either. But in a sense, they kind of do, right? We're not just going to, we're not going to put them in the overall scoreboard. But, you know, like bringing other people in, right? You know, and you're joyful to see them in, right? Because they get to experience that aspect of the church that you experience coming into the church, you know? And there's that part, like in a sense of it, you're the role of the father being joyful that people have come into the church and they've come because of you. Right? And you brought him in, so you've taken Jesse's and done the result of that, right? What I'm asking, though, is how do we, what do we do? There's two things I'm looking for here. Like, what do we do from the evangelism side of it, you know, to, you know, faithfully adapt this idea that the, you know, of sharing God's love and bringing those people in, right? Like, what is it that, like, I'm going to ask that question, and I'm going to pivot to something else with regards to this, because it does impact the, like the second part does impact the first part. I want you guys to think about the first part and everything like that while I bring up the second part, which is sort of fostering what we already have here in the community. Now, you notice in my bulletin, I have three things in there. Anybody know what they are? Anybody remember what they are? Don't look it up. Don't go to the back and grab one if there's extras back there. Do you remember?
It's like the ones like... So you turn around the page, it's like the whole...
It's the three questions I ask every week.
Oh, okay.
That section.
Did you bring someone to church?
Did you bring someone to church?
Have you reached at least one Vespers?
Have you been to Vespers?
Have you reached out to somebody who hasn't been in a while?
Have you been... Right.
Yeah. I forgot that.
Have you brought someone new to church? Have you reached out to someone who hasn't been to church in a while? And have you been to Vespers? Right? The Vespers one is just to get people to Vespers, because I think it's important to come to Vespers, mm-hmm. you know, in that sense. I mean, it makes the whole weekend that much... better when you get the fullness of the weekend, right? They're supposed to go hand in hand in some ways. Well, in all ways, really. But those two other questions, right? You know, have you reached out to somebody, you know, who hasn't been in church in a while? And have you brought someone new to church who's never been before, right? Those are the, that's part two that I want to talk about before we get into part one, right? Because we're talking about just, or rather just saying, someone who hasn't been to church in a while is part two. Someone who has never been to church is part one. But I want you to think about part one while you answer part two, which is reaching out to people who haven't been to church in a while, right? Bringing the prodigal sons home, you know? How often do people get the impression that it's just Father Stephen's job to call people and see how they're doing? How often do we get that? Do you not get that impression?
No, not really.
Good, and I've properly trained you guys. Because I'm going to tell you right off the bat, that is an ethos that exists in the church. Right, think about it from your old Protestant days, many of you who came from Protestant backgrounds, except for Bree. You know? I think you're the only one. Well, where did you come from? Protestant too, Chad?
Pentecostal.
Kind of same difference. Yeah, Protestant. Right? You know, Anglican, I guess, is the one I'm thinking of. Anglican's kind of like Catholic on Diet Coke.
Yeah.
or Coke Zero. Except for the Episcopalians. That's not Coke Zero. That's like... Oh gosh, I'm going to say something bad. that's like they said, here's Coke Zero. Or we're Coke Zero. And here's like that generic stuff, right? That they call like at Great Value
yes.
that Walmart has. Yes, but it's not even Coke anymore. Now it's just like, it's not even, they put the name Coke on it, but now it's like.
They call it like generic cola.
Yeah, but it's even worse than that. It's like. It's not cola anymore. It's like Sprite. But they're still calling it Coke. I can't quite think of the right word, right? You know, but anyway, before I get on too much of a tangent and everything like that, but that mindset of people thinking that, that I'm the one who has to do all the reaching out. And to a certain degree, that's true, right? It's my job to care for people. I was just looking at our catechism list today going, oh boy, I got a lot of people to talk to, you know? everything like that. Like, I have a list on my phone that has everyone's numbers and a little checkbox, and I put a little note that says, talk to that person, talk to that person. I got a lot of people that I have to talk to now. The good thing is a few of those are like families, so I can talk to like the husband and wife and call it good for like seven people. But still, you know, I have to like reach out, and especially like some of you guys who are catechumens who I've been, right? I didn't text you, Jesse, today, but I texted Luke and Colin and Bree. Right? I got a long list. I have to get through everybody, right? You know, over the week kind of a thing. But like, it's very much my job of, I have to handle that, right? You know, my question is how do we change that? So not to give myself an excuse not to do it, but like, how would you guys think would be the way that one could handle it? Right? And the answer to that question, of course, is, well, you do it yourselves. Right? You kind of help along that, right? Like, Anthony's a good example. I wish he was here, you know? Anthony does a good job of, like, helping me with reaching out, too. You know, he takes pictures of all the new visitors and helps me reach out to some of them, right? You know? But ask yourself this question, like, you know, are you doing that, too? Are you, even if you're a catechumen, are you asking, you know, others how they're doing on things like that? Are you, Father Anthony of Carmel, Blessed Memory, used to say, like, you know, lean the older people in church, right? Are you leaning on them? Are you requiring the priest to do your catechism for you? Are you putting in some of that effort too, you know, in that sense? So really it's more along the lines of like, I try to make it a point where if I don't see someone in church for a while, I'll try to call them or text them and just see how they're doing, right? But as the church grows, that's going to be nearly impossible, right? Like one of my... I would say it's a regret, but I consider it like a little, like a mini failure I've had here, right? There's been a couple of people here who I lost track of. I can't remember the names of them because I'm bad with names, and it was when I first got here, you know, in a sense. But that most of you guys don't know who it is, but there was a lady with her son that used to come when I first got here and stuff like that. I don't even know if they were catechumens. I think they were just inquirers, and it had been like they'd been there for a couple months and no one had asked them to become catechumens. Kind of a thing, right? I never got a chance to talk to them because I kept getting hit with everything and stuff like that. They don't come anymore. I don't have their information, or I would call them and try to get them to come back to church, you know, kind of a thing. But that's an example. Like, so overwhelmed, I can't do all of that, you know. At the same time, you know, sometimes there'll be somebody in the church who I'll see for a while and things like that, and then I don't see them and I make a note to call them and I just get busy, right? You know, now, is that my own fault? Sure, absolutely. I take 100% blame for that. You know, got to do a better job with that. And I try to. But the question comes down to is, and I'm saying this with the recording in mind, right, is those who are here present, are you reaching out to people too? You know, and the same thing to those who are listening. There's some people here in the parish who told me they listened to this. Are you also reaching out to people? You know, and stuff like that you haven't seen in a while. Or better yet, people that you do see, how are you asking, are you often asking them how they're doing, right? Are you sharing that, like, sort of sense of building a strong community internally as well, right? Or are you just kind of coming to church and doing your own thing? That's a question that oftentimes, you know, again, gets put onto the priest and people don't think about, you know? Because the thing about it is this gets into this conversation in this sense, right? You know, Paul talks about this, right? That the church is the body, and every essence of the body needs to work hand in hand with each other, no pun intended. Okay, right? But if only one part of the body is doing all the work, what ends up happening to the rest of the body?
Atrophies.
What's that?
Atrophies.
Atrophies? That's a good word. Yeah? For those who are five who might be listening, give another word to the atrophies. I don't have to explain what that word
withers.
Means. Withers. Withers. Okay, that's a better word. You know, that's a good word, but I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, someone's going to listen and go, what's atrophy mean? And I have to explain that. You know, withers. Is that a term from Harry Potter? No, just kidding. That's a good word. No, atrophy is a very good word. Just got to explain it. So withers, right? The body withers away, right? And what happens when the body withers away? What happens in the church if that happens? If all the work gets put on one or two people, what happens to the church? It dies, you know, it withers away, it gets weak, you know, in that type of sense. And we have to have a good, strong foundation here if we want to grow, you know. We can't, if you don't have that support in the parish, you know, and the people in the parish putting in their own work too, the church will die, you know?
That reminds me of the parable of the seed sower.
Right, we talked about that with that.
The seed scattered on the rocks will grow a little bit, but they'll just get choked by those rocks and then wither away.
Yeah, and just so you, what you're realizing now is all parables are the same parable in one way or another. That's what you're doing, which is good, right? And just like that parable, just I brought the rich fool. You brought up the sower, right? We've got all these parables. I connected to last week's on the talents, right? The point is like, you know, you want that foundation, that strong foundation that requires all of us, you know? I always like to, this one thing, somebody told me, I said, I bring sports up too much, but I'm going to bring up sports in this case. Sorry. I have to bring up sports for this one. Okay? You all know how much I like hockey. I always talk about hockey every chance I get. Okay? One of the reasons I really like hockey, one of the things I instill in my daughter with her team, right, is I tell her, and I was telling Jason kind of this a little bit before class, right, in the sense of like, you know, enjoy that fellowship now sort of thing, right? Enjoy that now because it builds your foundation for everything, right? In hockey, you ever watch a thing, and I did this whole ad thing a couple of years ago during the playoffs, where they talked about like the teams would lose and they get their press conferences, right? How often do you hear a player in hockey say, I was bad, or I. It's always we. It's always we. It's always a team mentality, right? That's a very big thing in hockey culture. It's always team mentality, you know, in this sense of if we lose, it's not like the goalie lost, unless it's the Edmonton Oilers, and it's definitely the goalie. It's if we lose, it's everyone lost. It was everyone's fault. Everyone's accountable. Everyone has to own up to it, right? Same thing for those who have served in the military, right? You know, one person's weak in the unit, the whole unit can get wiped out, right? Because of one person. So what are you told constantly to do? Think as a team, you know, in that sense, right? Am I wrong about that?
You're right. Yeah.
I'm right. I hope I'm right. I was guessing on that one.
I mean, is it? It's a little bit more particular because, like, there's four people on a crew, you know, the driver or mm-hmm. the tank. I should specify people. Driver, loader, gunner, and TC. Like, let's say the gunner doesn't find his target in time, the tank's getting shot. Driver doesn't move into position in time, the tank's getting shot. Loader doesn't move around in time, you're getting shot. And all four need to click
together. Everything needs to be perfect,
yes,
together,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. And I mean, all sports are that way, right? All things are that way. The church is that way, right? Our services are that way. If the choir is off, it doesn't matter if I sense the altar perfectly, okay? Because not that that's an issue, right? But or it happens very often, but that does happen, right? Where if the choir makes a mistake, it can throw the whole service off. And when mistakes happen, whether it's me or the choir or whoever it is, right? I was trying to make a little laugh it off so people don't think about that. They kind of laugh at me in that way, right? Sort of take that off of them, right? You know? But if that's off in any kind of way, it loses its essence of it, right? If the serving in the altar is off, but the choir is great, it can lose its essence of it, you know? In this kind of sense. Brother John Cox and I were talking about this a while back about how building up a good, strong community is having a hospitable community, a good choir, and services done well, right? Of course, all the other stuff's important too, right? But I thought it was interesting that he talked about it in that way because services done well with the choir and a hospitable community, well, that makes people feel like this is the place to be at, right? It builds a good thing because all the different pieces are working together. If all the pieces are working together really well, then you grow and people will be attracted to that, right? It's like what I talked about with, say, Seraphim of Sarov, right? Gain inner peace and around 1,000 around you will say, well, if you look like the image of what it's supposed to be, if you represent the brand the way the brand should be represented, then people are going to be attracted to that brand. If they see a good brand, then they're going to be attracted to it, you know? So that takes an effort of all of us, which is why it's so crucial that every single person here, those who are listening later on, those who are here now, right, sort of make it in their mindset of, you know what? Yeah, Father's the priest, but I should be putting in the work too. Some of you are very good at it, Nate, and we'll call out everybody, right? But it can't just be like one or two people, you know? and stuff like that, which is, I'm not putting you down. It's just a good thing, right? You know? What I'm trying to say is it takes us all, right? It takes all of us, right? We all win and we all lose. We all win together, we all lose together. We're going to win together in the church. It's a beautiful part about it. But, you know, that's the mindset we have to have, right? That being said, back to the first thing, you know, how do you apply that out into the world? How do you bring someone new to church with that? What does that look like? How do you go out there and find the guy among the pigs, you know, who wants to return to the church? What do you do in that regard? It's sort of a playoff of Jesse and Jason's earlier thing, right? You know, what do you do? How do you do it?
Well, you need to love them like the prodigals, or like the father.
What does that look? No, I want practical. I love them. Okay, what does that mean?
I mean, you have to actually go out there and look.
You have to go out there, right? Where do you go out there and look, though? What do they see it at? Okay, raise your hand if your whole family's Orthodox with you. I'm the only one who gets to raise my hand because my wife and daughter and I are the Orthodox altogether, right? And my own immediate family. Obviously, my in-laws are not, but my mom is. My dad's side of the family's not. But immediately is what I'm talking about, immediate family, right? Yeah, that's there, okay? So then the answer could be your own family is a good starting point, right? You know? I always like jokingly say, what do I say when you bring your families to church? Luke, what did I say when your parents came a few weeks ago?
We can fix them.
Well, I can fix them, right? You know, well, guess what? What else did I say to you?
They're always welcome.
No?
That's one thing.
That's one thing. That's all part of it. What did I also say to you?
Bring them back.
Yeah, what else? It's your job now.
Yeah, it's your job.
It's your job now, right? You got to go do it too. You know, you got to be that. That's the first part. Bring someone new to church. Well, guess what? That means you got to do that in your own families. You know? And that's hard because some of them, like, you know, will go on this and, you know, and things like that. And it's nothing against any of your guys' families who you've brought to church, right? You know? And things like that. I'm going to pick on Nate for a second, you know, in a sense, right? But, like, Nate will bring anybody and their mother to church, which is a beautiful thing. And that's, I definitely want that. So I'm kind of encouraging that, right? But, like, look at his wife. Sorry, Bree, I'm putting you on the spot now. Okay? Here you are, right? Because he won't stop until you come to church, right? That's basically how it is. Now, that extremism doesn't... I'm sorry, you're not extreme. Forgive me. That dedication is a good thing and a good thing to muster. I'm asking you guys to have a little bit of that dedication too, right? That may not work for you. You have to do it kind of what's going to work for you, right? Use your talents like we talked about last week, right? Use yourself in that sense, you know, but encourage it, right? You know, there's little ways you can do things like you're at your job and stuff like that. You know, you guys go to the month, you know, to the what do they call it?
The field.
Where you go to eat? What do they call it again?
The chow hall.
The chow hall. Thank you. The chow hall. Right.
I mean, I don't eat there, but.
But okay, but you know what? You don't eat there. Guess what? You're gonna start eating there once in a while. Why? So you can, you know, sit with a couple of guys that you've never sat before, right? And you don't even have to talk to them. You just cross yourself, say the Lord's Prayer, you know?
Hang a flyer.
But you talk. And if you strike up a conversation, say, hey, you know what? Like you brought your friend a few weeks ago. I think I kind of ruined that for you. But
No, he was just like, oh, man, I didn't realize I get put on the spot like that.
That's my problem is I put people on the spot when they come new to church. About that, you know, but which I'm sorry for that, but at the same time, I'm not because, like, I want them to know they're welcome here, and I could do it better, sure, but the thing is, right, you brought someone new, you're going to bring a lot of people new to church, back to the seed, right, you throw the seed out, and you're going to bring a lot of people new, but you got to put yourself out there, and you got to tell people about it too, right? We can't just sit there and go, yeah, you know, we'll think about it. I'll try. We're not going to grow this church because Father Stephen's really good at getting the website to rank, okay? Which it does, you know? Yeah, and I'm getting phone calls from it, you know? And us doing that kind of stuff. Like, that's not enough. That's also be all of you guys, too. Because the other thing about it is, too, is familiarity. When it's people around you that you know, right, that you're bringing to church and inviting to church and stuff like that, well, they feel a little more comfortable coming with you than they would just be walking in on their own, right? Think about it. How many of you would feel a lot more comfortable if someone, well, you came with your dad the first time, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I tried to get him back on my birthday for Christmas.
Sure, it felt a little more comfortable coming for the first time with him with you, even though he was also coming for the first time.
No, I came for the first time 2 weeks before that. I came in on a Sunday morning. I came in like halfway through, and I was like hanging out in the...
I thought you came with your dad the first time.
No, I brought him for the best person.
Okay. Then forgive me in that sense.
It's okay.
Hypothetically, you did it though, okay?
Yeah.
For sake of it.
But
it's sort of, or I guess I could mention them in this sense, right? Chastity and Jeremiah, right? Chastity came, you know, with Jeremiah because she was going to protect her son. She'll tell you that, which is an absolutely funny story, but at the same time, like, awesome story too, right? That she came in that sense to see, okay, he's, you know, I bet you Jeremiah felt a lot more comfortable with his mom coming too, right? Now, guess what? Both of them are catechumens. He's been a catechumen longer than her because she's like, yeah, seems like it's fine. We made him feel welcome. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to read more into this, right? And what did Anthony do? Oh, I know it's all weird for you, this whole liturgy thing and swinging censers and all the ritualist stuff. That's fine. Don't worry about that. Come to Bible study. That's the number one thing you guys can actually do. That's one of the things that I'm talking to Ethan about. I'm going to get one of these names right one of these days. Ethan about was starting a Bible study in Statesboro, or in Statesboro at the college, right? Because that's something that, well, you guys coming from Protestant backgrounds are very familiar with, right? You know, do something they're familiar with and then hook them in with everything else. It's like sort of like throwing out the line and seeing what happens, you know? That all being said, to say, you know what, use those things that kind of are familiar too, right? I've talked about this, and this will kind of be my last point, and I'll take a couple questions related to this, and then we can talk about other stuff afterwards, okay? You know, I like telling this particular story and stuff like that, where it's sort of my rah-rah-rah conversion story, if you will, okay? Like my kind of crowning achievement for conversion story. I have two of them as far as turning people or getting people to come Orthodox. My first one is the easy one, how I got my wife to become Orthodox. Third day, brought her to Vespers. It was easy. She's like, that's my church now. Wait, really? Yeah, that was it. Brought her to Vespers. She even said, nothing to do with you. I walked into the church and that was it. You know? Everyone used to seminary used to say, how do you get them to convert? Because I had all these classmates of mine who were single students who were dating non-Orthodox girls. How do you get them to convert so I can become a priest? Are you going to Vespers? No, but my real story is when I was actually working on my essay to get into seminary, I had to write a paper on the six books of the priesthood by St. John Chrysostom, and essentially a reflection on it, and that says to submit to my application and everything. And, you know, my wife worked in St. George, Utah. I obviously lived in Vegas. We lived in Vegas, but she would go up there and stay there during the week because she worked with her aunt who ran a home daycare and everything. And I would go up there because having a web design business, you could work anywhere. Okay, so I'd go up there and stay at her mom's house with her. And then we would come back on the weekends to go to church and do our thing. So we were paying rent to an apartment that we weren't even using half the time because we were up there so often. But anyway, I'm working on my essay to go to seminary. And this is something interesting enough. Ironically, I didn't even think about this till just now. Right? I was talking about this idea of reaching out. Remember how on Sunday I mentioned how the Mormons are really good at things that we could be better at? This is an example of that, right? If you haven't been in church in a while, they'll show up at your door. Now, people will say, they're showing up at their door so they get their 10%. That's true, okay? But they do a generally good job of trying to get you just to come back to church, too, right? Now, they colorful it up, right? That's not authentic, but it's still convincing. Where they'll come to your door. And they hadn't seen my mother-in-law and my father-in-law in church in a long time. And so somebody mentioned, oh, you haven't seen Tammy and Dee in a while. The elders or the guys on the bikes are going to be around, the little missionaries are going to be around the area. Have them stop by the house. Maybe they can get a bite to eat and then go about their way. And just make sure that they know that they got to come back to church and everything like that. And they do a really good job of doing that, because that is one aspect of being a missionary is you're not supposed to just go out and knock on random people's doors, you know, and tell them about Joseph Smith, the weirdo. Okay. But you're also supposed to like check on people too. All right. And that's one of their jobs. And right at that, well, these two missionaries showed up at the doorstep, knocked on the door. You know, my mother-in-law was not home. My wife was at work. Guess who was there? Just me, sitting there out on the couch working on my laptop. So I go over and I open the door. Here they are. My brain is like, oh, I'm going to go to seminary. I want to have a little fun here. I'm going to try and convince these guys to become Orthodox, right? Thinking I'm some, you know, Ortho bro before Ortho bro was a thing, okay? You know, not the, I mean, this was, what, 12 years ago or 13 years ago? So, you know, whatever, right? But it wasn't really a thing yet. But anyway, internet orthodoxy was a thing, but it wasn't like it is now, okay? Anyway, so I invite him in. Now, I had been thinking about this a lot by reading St. John's 6 books on the priesthood, which I would tell you guys to read just in general if you're curious. It's a little intense because it's talking a lot about ministry, right? One of the things he talked a lot about was is don't get into theological debates with people, right? Like, talk about them where they're at. That's going to be how you're going to minister to people. You're essentially, he didn't say this outright, but like, you're not going to, and this is coming from somebody who was very theological in all his works, right? What's essentially saying, don't, you're not there to win arguments. You're there to show them love and service and such like that. So I invited them in because they wanted to tell, give me the whole spiel. They asked, where's, are you, and I said, I'm Tammy's son-in-law and all this whatnot and everything like that. And they're like, oh, can we come in and talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Latter-day Saints and all the whole lot? I'm like, sure, let's have a little fun. anyway, at that. But I wasn't going to just do it in the sense of, oh, okay, let's have a theological debate and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. Okay? I started off with a very simple thing. I said, let's talk about history. And I asked them questions. And I kind of pointed them in ways I sort of Socratic method them. And I said, let's look into the history of all of this. Why would this happen? Why would it happen and then no one hear about it for 1,700 years? Why would it happen? You know, and they would, and it would kind of get them to answer, right? I was putting them on the spot. But I wasn't, like, debating them. I was talking about things we had in common. I was talking about things where I said, oh, you know what? Like, oh, you guys are really good about service. Do you know the early church did that too? Right? Like, I know about your pantries. I talked about this on Sunday, right? You know, they're Costco-sized pantries, right? Food pantries. I was like, you know, you're really good with that. You know, the early Christians did the exact same thing. They were the sizes of Costco's, but, you know, when someone was sick, they brought them food. They were a living embodiment of, you know, the parable of the goats and the sheep. You know, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was sick, you visited me. They literally would do that. You know, and I said, well, you guys kind of do that too, right? So I talked about our things in common and everything like that. And I just kept asking them questions. And I would ask them like random logical questions, like things like, you know, if there was a great apostasy, why didn't it happen this way? Because it would make more sense. If there's a guy going around telling you could become a literal god one day and rule over your own galaxy, if you will, okay, why wouldn't the Roman Empire embrace that? It was a question I asked. You know, it's a question I like to ask them, and they never have a good answer for it. They try to kind of work around that and things like that. And I say, well, why wouldn't they? Like, those are kind of things I would do. And I was talking to these two young men, right? I'm not going to tell you their actual names. I'll tell you the names that I for the sake of this story and right like that, just to, you know, because if I ever get around to writing my book and I want to write, I'm going to bring up this story in my book. In this sense, so I want to use their names for that, but we're gonna call them Michael and John, okay? As I'm talking to them, and we're just having a conversation and such like that, and I'm just talking about like the church and how the history, and we're talking about things we have in common and things like that. As we're talking about, they're asking questions about orthodoxy and all of this, and that's my in, because now I'm getting them talking and asking questions, and all I'm doing is just answering and asking them questions back, right? And you know, when the conversation's done, they leave. Nobody's could be converted either way, right? A few weeks pass, and another knock on the door. And, you know, John's there with a different missionary. And I go, oh, where's Michael at? He goes, well, he's not a missionary anymore. Oh, why? He called up his parents after he got done talking with you. Took the money that he had been given for the traveling and everything like that, and flew to Greece. He's gone to a bunch of monasteries out there. And I ended up finding out years later he became a monk. So that's my little crowning achievement. I made a Mormon a monk. okay? Which is like, oh, yeah, good job, Father Stephen. You're a wonderful priest. No, I'm not. Okay, let's not pretend like I'm anything of value. But, you know, the thing about it was, is I didn't argue with them. All I tried to do was just speak about repentance and how we serve and how we have things in common. And I took something that was an environment that I was placed in, and I just lived the gospel right there. And I'm not, again, I'm not praising myself because I'm not great at this. Okay, that was my, I have two achievements, okay? Some of you are more than me, Nate and Jason, okay? Right, in that sense. I guess I count my dad if we're going to count Bree, okay? So I got three and you've got like 12, okay? You know, but like, in that sense, you know, that's what we're called to do, aren't we? Aren't we called to bring the people around us? Right, so when I asked that question earlier about what can you do about the first one, that was not really a question I was expecting an answer for. Because the answer is very clear. In the church, with the second part, we reach out to the people here who we haven't seen in a while, or people we do see, or just see how they're doing when they come. You know, like your godparents, check out how they're doing, talk to them, right? Because their job is to make sure you're in church, but it's also your job to check on how they're doing too. You know, and things like that. You know, Jason, once in a while you could offer Jeannie a ride too. I'm teasing you. But right, point is like, and I don't mind doing the rides. I'm just being silly. But you know, you check on them and see how things are going and volunteer your efforts, right, within the church. But also within your own environments too. You know, I used the example of converting my wife and converting a random missionary, right, because that was the environment I was in, you know. And things like that. Well, guess what? We're in an environment here. We're in the Bible Belt, if you will. Is this considered the Bible Belt, yes, technically?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're in the Bible Belt. I don't know how much of the South is considered and how much isn't. So, right? But what is the one thing everyone talks about with Savannah? It's growing like crazy. People are moving in, right? Mm-hmm. I hear Hyundai's hiring. Okay? You know? I know that's a bad joke. Okay?
I get it.
Right, you know, but there's a bunch of people coming. I'll explain after the class. Okay, there's a bunch of people coming in, moving into the area, right? You know, and stuff like that. And you guys are going to experience that with people that you work with, because new people are going to come in, right? Especially guys at your base are all over the world. People at your jobs and stuff like that. Nate, you're rock. You see people all the time. Probably a lot of people that move in weeks ago that you have to go see. Hey, by the way, this is, you know, some information on the pack, which whatever you guys do with your door-to-door stuff, right? I don't need to know it right now. It's not important, right? You know, whatever you're doing, right? You're interacting with the people around here because this is our environment. And so, really, you need to convert the people around you, people you interact with, you know, things like that. Encourage. Like I mentioned a while back, we're trying to get my daughter's hockey team to come to church. We're very close with one of them. You know, just got to get them to cross the line. He's from the Czech Republic. I'm pretty sure he's already Orthodox. I'm just trying to get him to come, you know? Everything like that. But that, it'll happen when it happens, you know? My point is like, you got to get the people around you too. So it's got to be people inside the church. And it can't just be on Father Stephen. It's got to be people on the outside of the church, in our families, in our schools, in our work, right? It can't just be Father Stephen. I can only do so much, right? You know, the church did not grow. It did not bring in all the prodigal sons back into the church and back to Christ by letting other people do it. You know, they did it. That's why I was so fiery on Sunday about this, right? Because if we don't, other people are going to take up that mantle, right? And we like that. And essentially, we have to be the prodigal son who says, no, I'm going to come back and I'm going to bring those. I'm going to basically be both the father, the brother, and the younger brother all in one. It's essentially what I'm asking you guys to do. Because you have all experienced the joy of the Father. You have been given the inheritance, the fullness of the inheritance of the son, first the older son, and all the service and bringing in the church. And you came into the church through many of you, even those who were baptized as babies and came in as babies, right? As the one being returning from, you know, returning through repentance. So go out in the world, do the exact same thing. That's the real thing I want to get from this parable. All right? So any questions about this that I can put over the recording, or should we just go ahead and end the recording? You can ask me anything else. No? Okay. Let's pray. It is truly meet to bless you with the Theotokos, ever blessed, the most pure, and the mother of our God. More honorable than cherubim, and more glorious beyond compare than the seraphim. Without defilement, you gave birth to God, the Word, true Theotokos, who magnify you. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Amen.